irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Razor Riffs with Keith Razor and Alan Lee, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Excellent. Are we on air?
I think we are.
Excellent. Welcome to the show, guys.
Yeah, man.
This has been a fun show.
Another Tuesday night here at LA Radio.
So this week has been kind of weird. I had a bad week, Alan.
I know. I witnessed most of it, but not all of it.
A lot of people were like on the show. They were like, "Hey, how come you didn't announce the guest?" And here's the truth, because we didn't know who the guest would be.
That's true.
I had a connection to get John Lovitz.
Yeah.
That fell through.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden...
That was a bummer.
And then all of a sudden, yeah, I'm at a comedy club because I do stand-up.
We want everyone to know that.
Yeah. Alan was mocking me at McDonald's.
Well, I was just having fun.
So we call, you know. Anyway, so the comedy club owner guy said John Lovitz was at the comedy club last night,
yeah,
and he forgot his wallet.
That was amazing.
And he's like, "Can you return it to him?" I was like, "Yeah," because then I could be like, "Hey, is he going to do the show or not?" You know?
Yeah, yeah.
So what happens was I have his wallet, and it was really weird, you know, because like I have John Lovitz's wallet in my hand.
And you're a John Lovitz fan. A
huge John Lovitz fan. Any questions? And, you know, so I was like, "Oh, this is going to be cool." So we drive 3 hours to get there.
Yeah.
And then an hour to pick you up. So that was 4 hours.
Four right there.
So we waited for John Lovitz.
At the famous Beverly Hills Hotel.
That's right. Yeah, at the Beverly Hills Hotel. And we waited for John Lovitz. And he said, "Meet us at 2 o'clock. So we were there at 2 o'clock. We never got to see him.
It's unfortunate.
So what we did was we left his wallet with the concierge, and we left a note that said, "Hey, we just drove 4 hours. Can you do the podcast?" So then John Lovitz calls the manager of the comedy club, and he's like, "It's a little weird. How does this guy have my wallet?" You know? And I was like, "Oh." And he's like, "Yeah, John was really freaked out by the note. I thought it was a very good note."
It had its points.
Yeah. But anyway, so we lost that connection with John Lovitz, and it sucked because I was looking forward to it.
Don't be so final about it. I think you never know.
Yeah, you never know what the future stands for. But and then we were supposed to get another guest, and then that one backfired.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's hard, you know? It's hard doing a podcast when all the guests is just... something to do, and like I said, that's why I didn't announce John Lovitz, because if I did announce John Lovitz and then he's not here, that makes me a liar.
Well, it just means that he didn't show up.
Yeah, but it makes me a liar, and I cannot be a liar.
Don't be hard on yourself.
Don't be hard on myself. I just got a funny text. But no, you know, it's like one of those things where I was very disappointed. But you know, tonight we have a great guest. It was a last second favor, and you know, it's really cool because I'm actually doing stand-up with her, and on Thursday.
I've seen her at the Ice House.
Yeah. And our guest tonight is Debbie Gutierrez. Did I say it right?
You say it right. See, I said Gutierrez. She's probably going to correct us.
Yeah, I'll ask her.
I said Gutierrez. You said Gutierrez.
I think it's Gutierrez.
But that's because that's how they were introduced her on another show.
Yeah.
But they were like, maybe they didn't really know how to pronounce it, and she let it go by.
Well, for those of you who don't know, Debbie Gutierrez is...
Gutierrez. Well, she's going to correct it.
She's going to hate us.
And I don't want you. And there's no betting here. Yeah. Who's right or wrong? We're not in that situation.
We're horrible at betting.
Well, because you need money to bet. It's a little problem.
Okay, so Debbie Gutierrez. Okay, is that
Gutierrez?
Didn't I say that?
You said Gutierrez
the first time, but now I said Gutierrez.
No, you said that's good right there.
You're killing me, Smalls. Anyways, so Debbie Gutierrez, she's a big stand-up comedian. She opens up for Brad Garrett. That's a huge deal because Brad Garrett's another one of my favorite comics. She's been on The View.
Yes, she certainly has.
Like, that's a huge deal, you know, sitting next to Barbara Walters.
Oh, that's right.
You know? I mean, I don't
Whoopi Goldberg?
No, Whoopi was not there.
Oh, no,
She was hosting for Whoopi Goldberg. But she was on The View. That's a huge thing, you know?
Great show.
And, you know, she's a regular at the Ice House and, you know, Comedy Time. She does a lot of corporate comedy events, gets a lot of... She
does that as well.
Yeah. She's an author, which is cool.
A relationship expert,
which is why I wanted to talk to her, because
really bad.
I'm having relationship expert issues.
Uh-oh.
But the coolest thing about her is she's very, very funny.
Yeah.
And she's, you know, willing to do our podcast, which is cool. I tried to get her for season one, actually, but season one, it was just hard because we were a video podcast.
We had video podcast.
And... on video podcasts, you need the guests there to have a show.
It helps.
And the cool thing about audio podcasts is if a guest doesn't want to show up, all you have to do is ask them to phone call.
I love the technology.
Yeah. But on video, you need them to actually show up.
It helps.
Yeah.
But a lot of times they like to show up and sit with a microphone in their face like this.
Yeah, yeah. It's just this season, none of the guests want.
I personally... think that staying at home and lying in
bed. We're getting a telephone call. One second. Maybe this is Debbie.
Debbie?
Hello?
Hi, Keith. It's Debbie Gutierrez.
Oh, hey, Debbie.
We were just talking about you.
We were just introducing you, and then you called.
Here I am.
Yeah.
Now, Debbie, we have a question. How do you say your name again? I said it was Gutierrez, right?
Oops.
Nope.
Gutierrez.
Yeah,
I was right.
Oh, good for you.
Alan was wrong.
Well, you see, I'm half Cuban, and the Cuban side said Gutierrez.
Debbie, this is Alan, my trusty sidekick.
Alan Lee, I'm just a quiet one, the unknown. I'm the unknown comic. Unknown comic.
Debbie, Alan was telling me he's seen you at the Ice House several times.
I have indeed.
Oh, good. Yeah.
So, Debbie and I are actually doing the Irvine Improv on Thursday.
Great. Fantastic.
Yeah. It's going to be fun. I've been trying for like 4 years to open up for you, Debbie. I don't know if you noticed.
I know. I know. But you know what's funny is that I know a lot of comics take a sidekick with them and they go together and stuff.
Thank you.
I've never had anybody like that. So they always get my opener for me or my... feature for me. Less drama for me, too. But
all right.
Yeah.
I know you've been so sweet in asking, and they finally asked me, hey, is there somebody that you would like? And I said, yeah, let's give Keith Risa a call.
Yeah, and I appreciate that, because Debbie's one of my favorite comics, and it was cool.
Oh, you're too nice.
All right.
You're too nice.
Yeah, we were talking about how we tried to get you last season on the podcast, but it just didn't work out for whatever reason. And then we were supposed to get you in January, and then I was like, hey, Debbie and I are doing a show on Thursday, and I wonder if I could call her in and tell her to do it today.
What timing?
Yeah, it was like, it's one of those things, you know what I mean? So it was pretty cool.
Good. And you know what? I don't have to drive anywhere. Well, I can do it from the comfort of my home.
We were talking about
exactly.
That. Did you hear us? We were talking about how wonderful the technology is and how some people like to come in, and we noticed, although they have it on our show, and actually sit at the table with us, but I'm all for laying in bed there, Debbie, and just
I know,
talk.
And you know
what's
cool
the big
about
deal?
Auditions, too, is that you can ask for, you know, a green audition.
Nice.
Can I, you know, in other words, I want to save gas
so the
and
green...
not pollute the world and just do an audition via
green.
Via tape. So, yeah,
I thought you meant green room.
Very earth aware when all it is you just don't want to drive.
That's so cool.
Yeah, I actually did do one green audition, and I got a call back from it, but they made me drive to the callback.
Come back in,
so that ruined the
green experience for me. Because I was like, oh, this is cool. This is what acting is. I don't have to, you know. And then I had to drive. It was like a 3-hour traffic, and then it was like 1-minute monologue, and I didn't get it. I was like, ugh.
Well.
Isn't it crazy when it's just one thing or a look or something, and you got to come all the way in?
Yeah, it's...
But, you know, it's part of the game. You got to play it.
Well, I think that's why I'm kind of like out of the acting game, because I fell so in love with stand-up, you know? So I'm hoping that someone will, like, watch my stand-up and be like, oh, hey, you want a part? And
it happens.
You know what I mean?
It happens every 10,000 years.
Yeah, we were a part of the stand-up just for you.
Exactly. There you go. That's what I'm saying. Debbie, we wanted to talk to you. I have a couple questions on the Facebook and the Twitter feed for you. Are you more into Facebook or Twitter?
You know, I like Facebook, but I'm really getting the power of Twitter. You know, and I've got some really good friends in the business, like Ken Young is a business, is a friend, Dr. Ken, and Sherry Shepherd, and Yvette Nicole Brown, and, of course, all the guys from The Chew on ABC. And I realize that when I tweet them, they retweet, and then people retweet from there. So it's a really powerful form of promotion, you know?
Yeah, Twitter is very – Twitter, I think, is really powerful. But the thing is like – I'm just now getting used to Facebook because I've been so stuck on MySpace. And when no one's on MySpace, yeah. And then you get, you know, so I'm like 3 years behind, you know? So, but Twitter's cool because you only have a certain amount of letters to tweet, you know? So whatever you do, you got to do it short and fast.
They're disciplined over
there. Which I appreciate. Sometimes Facebook, it's like, oh my gosh, really? Do I want to continue all the way and see whether or not I like your post?
Exactly, yeah. And then with the Facebook, all you have to do is retweet or like it. And you don't have to follow everybody on Twitter, too. That's the cool,
that's the
cool thing about it. So, okay, so we have a question from the Twitter feed. Hi, Debbie.
Twitter feed.
Yeah. Hi, Debbie. Does your husband or any of your children come on tour with you to your regular stand-up gigs?
Only the fun places. If I'm doing Las Vegas, if I'm doing New York, there's some parts of Texas they like to go to, but, you know, Springfield, Illinois, no.
No.
You know, anybody want to go? You can see where Lincoln was born. Nope.
I would totally go there. I like to see Lincoln.
I would go. I know Springfield.
I remember taking my little girl to New York and her never seen snow before. Oh. And she had mittens on. She goes, what are these? And, you know, so they had never seen snow, or my littlest one had never seen snow. And New York, she had never seen New York. So when it's a fun experience, of course, they'll go, you know, but otherwise, you know, not really, no.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when I'm going to improv, Irvine Improv, my 17-year-old wants to go because there's a mall attached.
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
No, because I get Irvine and Brea confused a lot because Irvine just moved. Have you done the new Irvine yet?
I have, and it is just beautiful.
It's huge, isn't it?
Gigantic.
And
yeah, it is just. It's big, but they know how to work it so that so it can be an intimate number, but you still feel like you're a part of a big crowd. Like I did a fundraiser there, and so it was just fundraiser people, so it was a smaller crowd. But it just felt like a full room the way that they blocked it off, and I'm not explaining it fairly, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's a room that can be both intimate and large, and even kind of concert type with the big screen TVs and stuff.
Yeah, I think the TVs is cool because, like, when it's a sellout, a lot of short people end up sitting in the back for some reason, you know?
Right, really? Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I like that they're in the back of the room because when they're right there at the front, it's so funny because you're looking right into the audience and they're looking off to the side.
Like
they're looking at the big TV.
Like the Laugh Factory. Whenever I do the Laugh Factory, I want to see myself on the TV, I guess. You know, that's why I never do the Laugh Factory, but whatever.
Oh, my God.
It's a neat-looking screen.
Yeah, but see, like, with what these TVs, they're in the back. So, like, if you sit in the back, you still can see audio, too.
Right.
You know, and it's, like, really nice, too. Yeah. I think the new Irvine fits, like, 500.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
It's huge. I did it with Tom Arnold, and you would think Tom Arnold would get 500, and he only got 100. And it was still like really. No, I don't mean that in a bad way. But what I'm saying is like it was still really, like Debbie was saying, it was really. It seemed like it was a full house, but the thing is, it was just too big. And like with Brea, it gives you that comedy feel where they pack it out, you know?
Yeah.
All right, and then the second question for Debbie. Debbie, when were you passed at the Laugh Factory and the Ice House? How did it feel to become a regular at these great stand-up places?
You know, at the Laugh Factory, my very first time going in, I was so, so blessed. I really was. I did a comedy class at the Ice House. And part of the graduation ceremony, as you all know, is you go and you do your 20 minutes. So I was amazingly blessed that somebody saw me there, passed my name on to a manager, Howard Lapidus, an amazing manager. And Howard Lapidus, and he had a partner too, oh my God, so many years ago. What was his name? Oh, anyway, it escapes me for now. But anyway, so the two of them were managing me. And they said, have you done the Laugh Factory yet? And I said, not yet. So I went to go do it, and I was standing in line, and they called me out of line, and they said, you don't have to do the 3 minute. And I'm like, oh, okay, you have to do the 20. So in some ways, it was really cool because I didn't have to do the, you know, wait in line and do the audition for Jamie. I was really lucky that because I came with a good management company and they had faith in me, and Jamie had faith in my management company, that I could just go ahead and take a slot. So I had a 20-minute slot, and I was really scared, you know, my first time at the you know, world-renowned Laugh Factory doing 20 minutes. But I really took my classes seriously. I was a pretty good writer in my classes, and you know, it just shows that you can, if you really take what you're doing, your craft, and you study it, and you know it inside out, then, you know, you can get up there and do 20 minutes. So that's what I did, and I became a regular ever since then. I don't think Jamie was ever the wiser, you know.
Wow.
Just looked me right into it. So, that's the Comedy Store, I played the Comedy Store as well. So for a few years, I played the Laugh Factory early show, and then I ran down to the Comedy Store with a bunch of comedians. We'd jump in one car, and we'd go down the Comedy Store, and we'd do a set there, and then we'd jump back in the car and go do a midnight show with Fraser Smith at the Laugh Factory. So three shows in one night.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's great.
And the good thing is they're so close together, too, so it's not really that far of a drive.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But the question I had is, like, when you've been doing stand-up for almost more than 20 years, right?
21 years,
And you were teaching before that, correct?
10 years, uh-huh.
Yeah. Now, when you were teaching, were you still doing stand-up at the same time?
For about a year.
Yeah.
For just about a year, yeah. But, you know, again, I just, like I said, I was really prepared. And being a teacher, you can teach a teacher anything.
Yeah.
So, you know, I went to class and I took my notes and I knew what they expected inside out. And also, ever since I'm six, I was studying comedy. And I really wanted to do comedy, but my family, of course, never supported it. They said, no, 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 you know, you should be a teacher, a nurse, something that you can make money at.
Sure.
But it was always in the back of my head, one day I'm going to be a comedian. So I had studied all the greats, mm-hmm. and I knew the pioneers. And looking at some of the women in the business, you really get to know what a struggle comedy was mm-hmm. back then and how many barriers they had to break. Yeah. Joan Rivers, Moms Mabley.
Phyllis Diller.
Ann Mira. Phyllis Diller. You know, I mean, even before Roseanne, mm-hmm. you know, there were these greats that mm-hmm. really got out there and made it work and made a road when there was no road.
Right, right.
You know, and they were the first to leave their kids and their family and to go to places like, you know, like the Vietnam War, to go entertain mm-hmm. the troops, you know, and so in hospitals, military hospitals and such. And so I learned a lot about my craft and, you know, always in the back of my mind, I'm like, oh, one day, you know, my name's going to be on lights in Vegas and I'm going to call a famous Hollywood friend and have coffee and while I'm in Vegas. And, you know, that happens now. And I'm so excited.
Yeah.
That's great.
The thing that I really like about you, Debbie, is your comedy relates to men as well. And you know, a lot and that's very smart for a female comedian, because a lot of females, they just relate to females. You know what I mean? And I think it's kinda like when a guy comedian, you know, he relates to the guys, but the girls are better laughers than guys are. I mean, we could agree on that, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah. But you know what happened is, I was listening to an interview with Chris Rock, and again, if there are comedians listening, you need to study your craft. You need to listen to interviews. You should take notes when you hear these people speak about their experiences or how they write or how they think or what their goals are.
Absolutely.
So I was listening to Chris Rock, and Chris Rock said, as a black comedian, it's easy to make black people laugh. My challenge is to make white people laugh at the black experience. And so as a female comic, it's easy to make females laugh. It's easy to make other women laugh, you know?
Yeah.
The challenge was make men laugh about either the male experience or the female experience. So I was really lucky that I worked with a lot of guys, and I could study them, and I could watch them, and get to know them, and I like them. I like men. I think men really, really try hard, and I think for the most part, you know, they're wonderful people, women just kind of misunderstand, or worse yet, they're trying to turn them into women, and they're men, and we got to just love them and accept them for being men. So that was my point of view that I wanted to get across. So then I started to study men and write material about them.
And like that's...
And always a positive thing. Always a positive thing.
That's what I was just going to say.
And I was really amazed when I would get on sports radio talk, you know, and that was my demographic, were these guys that would buy my CD and listen to it on the boat, you know, because I tell the truth about men and that they're loving and that they try and they're good people and... I just hate when women comics get up there and like, you know, men are all jerks, men blah, 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 you know, or my bodily functions and my boobs. And, you know, it's just, it's a one-trick pony. And the idea behind comedy is to tell a story that a lot of people can relate to.
Thank you.
Exactly. And so that's why I love your stand-up, because you're relating to everybody, an entire comedy club, and not just women. And like, you know. A lot of females, you know, they talk about the body parts and stuff like that. And it's like when I see that when I see that comedy, I'm not saying it's not funny. I'm just saying I can't relate to it because I don't have massive, huge boobs or, you know what I mean?
Bodily fluids.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know what I found out, too, is that anytime you're a minority, if you're not careful, your comedy sounds like everybody in the group.
Oh.
So when they have a, you know, girls' night... and it's all female comics, everybody's talking about the same thing. Or it's Latino night. They're all talking about the same thing. And, you know, anytime you get a group of comics that are all one minority and they're all talking about the same experience, now there's nothing new and fresh about you. So I've always tried to stay away from the whole Latino angle or, you know, girly stuff. Because now you are more marketable, and you're fresh, and you're different.
Yeah.
And you stand out.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's very great advice, because I think a lot of comedians, especially when they're first starting out, they say, oh, I got to be like everyone else, you know, because they're getting work.
Yeah.
And I think I think if you turn, it's like a Rubik's Cube, you know, it's like if you keep turning it, eventually all the all the colors will match. And I think with your comedy, you're showing that you can match all four sides. You know what I mean?
Aw, nice. It's a good way to put it. Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, so, you know, that's just my thinking out of the box with my Asperger's, I guess, because, you know, but
all four
I seriously mean that. Like, your comedy is just so relatable that it's, is there a guitar playing in the background?
I don't know. Did we order a guitar on the
show? I don't know.
We don't even have that.
Anyways, I'm very... That's my OCD.
Oh, downstairs they're playing Christmas music. They're decorating the tree, so...
Okay.
Oh, no. I thought it was in the building.
I thought it was in here.
No, we thought it was in the building.
I was like, I mean... Well, it's funny because we saw a homeless guy outside playing the guitar, and Alan gave him $10, and I was like, oh, he's just going to spend that on booze and drugs. And Alan's like, oh, it's better than giving it to you. I was like... I was like, what's that supposed to mean? Whatever.
Now.
Yeah, I'm going to have my husband turn it down. I just texted him to turn it down.
Oh, no, it's fine.
Oh,
it's fine.
No.
I
like it.
I just didn't know if it was my microphone or something.
No. Leave it on. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, it gives the show some premise. Here's another
17-year-old she's almost 18, and she's and I put on Christmas music because we started like 7 o'clock, 7:30, decorating the tree, and she goes, "Oh God, Christmas music!" My dad, my husband's all, "You shut up and let your mother Elizabeth what she wants to listen to." Merry Christmas.
See, I love Christmas, but Christmas music kind of scares me in a way. Like, it gives me nightmares. Like, what's that song where it's like, din 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 din, Christmas is here, Christmas is here. You know that, what song I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Like, that's, yeah, that song gives me nightmares because I saw Home Alone, and it was in Home Alone. And
did
I
they play it in Home Alone? Is what you're saying?
Yeah, they played it in Home Alone, and I always looked like Macaulay Culkin. So whenever my family would leave, I would think, like, I was in Home Alone, and then they'd play that song, and I'd be like, oh, my God. You know, Daniel Stern and Joe Pesci are going to try and kill me.
That'd be a very strange Christmas.
Yeah. But now that I look about it, I'm like, yeah, it wouldn't be so bad because I love Joe Pesci, you know.
Yeah, well, I'm a fan of Pesci, too. I don't want him to kill me.
I would just
me.
Love to be inside your mind.
No, I actually...
How entertaining would it be to be there?
No, you want to hear a true Joe Pesci story?
Well, who wouldn't?
Okay. I used to work at a grocery store. And Joe Pesci was buying wine there, like a whole bunch of wine, you know? And, like, I'm so, like, starstruck, you know? And so, like, I saw him. I was like, oh, my God, this is Joe Pesci, you know? I got to talk to him. Yeah, sure. So I'm scanning his groceries, and I don't know what to say, you know? And I was like, oh, hey, Joe, how are you, buddy? Acting like I've known him for a while. And he turns to me, he's like, good. And then, like, the, you know, there's a bagger, and she was, like, really cute. Yeah. And she was like, you know, she's like, what are you doing? I was like, he knows me, we're buddies. And I was like, hey, Joe, you don't remember me? We worked together twice, you know? And he turns to me and he looks at me for literally 2 minutes. He's like, Macaulay, you gained weight.
That's funny.
Oh my gosh.
And then he's like, what are you doing working at a grocery store? Didn't you get like $13 million for Home Alone?
Oh my gosh. That's funny.
That's funny.
And I was like, oh, well, you know, I spent it all on stuff.
$13 million worth.
On Triscuit crackers.
Yeah. He obviously knew I wasn't, Nicole, you know, but, sure, like, he was just so quick-witted.
And yeah, he came back quickly.
Yeah, yeah. It was just so surprising because he doesn't do anything now, you know?
Well, you know, that's kind of a... Maybe he's semi-retired.
I think he is retired. I think he does music now. But, anyways... That's my Joe Pesci story, and a lot of people. Yeah. We got another Twitter question for you, Debbie. Are you ready?
Yeah.
All right. Favorite comedians working today, and who made you laugh growing up?
I was going to ask her that.
Did you tweet it?
No. I did not. I was going to ask her on the show.
Okay. But
it obviously it's tweeted.
Huh.
Favorite comedians.
Well, it's a hard
one,
isn't it?
You know what's funny is that. It's funny because with all of us working so much, it's rare that we can just go and watch somebody else's set. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true.
So, and then I'll go on an off night and go see Gabe Iglesias and go, oh my God, I forgot how funny he was, or Ian Bagg, or Adam Farrar. Adam Farrar is hilarious. Mm-hmm. I forget how funny he is.
Yeah.
Brad Garrett, I love him. I forget how offensive he is. Mike Mullaney is... Mike Malone is fantastic. John Mulaney, I enjoy him. Of course, who doesn't love? Who's the guy? Hot Pockets. Ah, what is his name, guys? Come on.
I don't know.
Jim Gaffigan.
Hot Pockets.
Jim Gaffigan.
Jim Gaffigan.
He's not one of my favorites.
Not one of your favorites.
Of course. I mean, and I really admire Brian and Jim because they're always writing.
I like Brian Regan.
Brian Regan's always writing, like, and you know, Jim's always writing. And who else? You know who's making a comeback who I just think is hilarious, whether he's doing stand-up or he's on panel, and that's Dana Carvey.
Yeah.
Dana Carvey has always made me laugh in the past, but if you see how he is, you know, he's touring now with his sons, you know, the Carvey boys, and... Just him just sitting on panel. He is just a delight to watch. So I really enjoy Dana Carvey.
You like
Carvey.
Dana Carvey.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned Dana Carvey because I just auditioned for that show he has for the Impressions.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So
right. We made a little tape.
Yeah, and I'm not an impressionic comic. You know, I don't know how to do impressions, but I could do a mean green you know, Dana Carvey impression. So
let me hear it.
Oh, you want to hear it?
Of course I do.
Did you ever see this movie called Master of Disguise with Dana Carvey? No? All right. Well, he plays this guy called Mr. Turtle, and he, like, disguises as a turtle. So he's all like, turtle, turtle. Like, that's my impression of him. And, you know, so I sent that in. It
my gosh, I thought it was him.
No, but I sent that because I thought it'd be funny. And then they sent me a thing, and they're like, oh, we want you to come in for a real audition. I was like, oh, great. I don't have anything else besides the turtle.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I'm singing broccoli.
Well, so, you know, I'm kind of... But I think even if I do get it, if I get on TV, that would help my comedy career. Just, you know, I say, oh, yeah, I was on whatever station it is for 2 seconds, you know.
It's a positive thing.
Yeah, get more gigs. Debbie, what was it like being on The View?
Oh, my God. It was frightening. I was with my friend Sherry Shepherd, so that was good. So I knew I wasn't going to get any, you know, softball pitch in my head. But I got to work with Barbara Walters, and that was pretty exciting. And Joy Behar, who has always been so sweet and such a delight to work with, and I've worked with her on her show as well. And, you know, she was wonderful, and Sherry was terrific. And Barbara was there. And Barbara Walters, she, you know, I talked about loving my husband and being a mom with rules and regulations. And, you know, Barbara called me a mean mom. And I said, yeah, I'm a mean mom. I went to mean mom school, and look at me now. I'm a teacher. And, you know, and so it was fun. It was fun because I think Barbara tried to trip me up in a couple places, but I made her laugh. And watching the tape, I was amazed to see how much she was laughing. So it was an interesting experience, you know, to have that many women with really no direction and these hot topics that everybody wants to weigh in. And it was interesting. It was very interesting.
Yeah,
I like The Chew better. I did The Chew, which is also an ABC production with some amazing, amazing chefs. Michael Simon, Mario
Tali. Oh, that must
have
been fun.
Carla Hall, Clinton Kelly, Daphne Oz. And that show is about making cocktails, making amazing food, making conversation, and I loved it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's cool that you went on it with Sherry Shepherd. She's hysterical.
Oh, she is. Yeah. And Sherry, I've known Sherry longer than one of my kids. So we go way back.
Is that the 20-year-old?
I know her. How long have Sherry and I... Actually, I have pictures of Sherry at one of my baby showers.
Wow.
So
what?
We go back that far. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sherry was on a TV show called Less Than Perfect. And my uncle was on that TV show, so I met Sherry once or twice.
So. She's a nice gal. Yeah. She really is sweet.
Yeah, I was a kid, and you know, she wouldn't remember me, but I remember when I went to the taping on that, I was obsessed with Andy Dick, you know, because he was on that show.
Yeah.
So I was like, talking to my uncle, I was like, hey, Pat, can you have Andy talk to me after the show and stuff? And he's all like, well, I'll see what I can do, but I kind of want to get out of here and go to Jack in the Box.
How funny.
He knows Jack in the Box.
Yeah, Jack in the Box is like the coolest place ever. Do you ever eat at Jack in the Box, Debbie?
Who doesn't?
No, she goes on gourmet shows.
I just want you to know that was not a Twitter question. That was just a question.
That was just a question you came up with right now.
Oh, this is
actually... She goes on gourmet shows. I got to tell you about this gourmet show. So I'm sitting there with all these master chefs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And somebody says, Michael Simon says, hey, rumor has it. Because, you know, when you go on these talk shows, they just ask for all this information. You have no idea what they're going to talk about. And it could be one of, you know, all these topics mm-hmm. that your family, turn pictures in and stuff. So word on the street is you make your dog's dog food. And I did. And I made turkey meatloaves for her.
Nice.
And she's a rescue. She's a bully breed, which, you know, happens to be the favorite of Michael Simon, who's this Iron Chef. And he goes, I love that you make your dogs dog food. And then Clinton Kelly is a big animal rights supporter. And so they said, tell us how you make it. So I turn and I look at these four Iron Chefs and I just go blank. I'm like, how am I going to talk to these Iron Chefs about how to make homemade dog food?
That's funny.
And but they couldn't be nicer. They really couldn't be nicer.
So were they making supportive of that, or were they
suggestions?
Oh, absolutely! Because I didn't realize, but off camera, you know, they're all telling me how they're animal lovers and they're rescuers and, you know, big promoters in that world, and so they just love the fact that, you know, I took that care to make my dog's dog food. Really, it was just that the smell of dog food was so gross, and it left her breath all gross, and everybody was, you know, putting her food in the bowl like, you know?
Yeah.
And the dog's like, well, why do I want to eat it? So then I started making her turkey meatloaf and, you know, veggie meatloaf. And
you're making us hungry.
And I don't eat dog food that much.
But you eat turkey meatloaf.
Yeah, but, you know, dog food sounds pretty good, you know?
It's just a turkey meatloaf.
That's funny. Now, did any of the chefs offer recipes that they might have done for their dogs?
No, but a lot of people wrote to me and asked me what my recipe was, and then I make her pumpkin cookies and oatmeal peanut butter cookies.
Oh, that's...
And people were asking me for my recipes. So,
that's hilarious.
Yeah.
That's funny.
In fact, when we perform at Irvine, Keith, there's going to be a big group from For Life Rescue, which is a rescue out there in that area. And they're really sweet people, and they're fans, so they're coming.
Oh, that's awesome.
You know, when I was visiting my family in New York, my little niece, you know, went to one of these pet stores where they had one of those groups, and I was amazed that the animals they had rescued were just like, I guess they came from extremely good homes.
Yeah.
And they were just, I couldn't believe that, you know, they were lost and had to be rescued, because these were like, I mean, they were just coif. Their hair was done, and they were so sweet, you know. And you know, it's amazing what you can get at these rescue deals, right, Debbie? I mean,
Oh, yeah. And you know what I realized, too, is the people who take pictures, the photographers who take pictures of these really sweet animals, they're taking this picture that this dog's life or this cat's life really depend on this picture. They've got to capture this, you know, personality, the quirky, the fun, the loyalty, the love in the eyes. They've got to capture all that to make this picture the best picture for their website.
That's so funny.
That these sweet things can be adopted.
Well, I mean, I totally know what they're saying, because sometimes, like, you'd be watching the TV, and, like, I'll share a story, okay? I mean, yeah. So I was watching adult TV the other night, and then it was Girls Gone Wild. And then all of a sudden it cuts to a commercial of dog rescuing. And, like, it totally ruined my adult experience, because I felt so bad for the dogs. You know? So I was just like,
A hard segue transition right now.
Yeah, shame on TV companies for doing that.
No, they are ruthless.
No, I mean, I'm glad that they do it.
But, I mean, they interrupted your
Girls Gone Wild
Girls Gone
experience.
Wild with,
yeah. Has that ever happened to you, Debbie?
Oh, my gosh, like every other Saturday. I'm sick of it, I tell you. I'm sick of it.
That wasn't a Twitter question, by the way.
We actually came up with that by ourselves.
Yeah, that was a good one. No, this is actually probably the best question, and I totally think you should get one. Have you ever taped or released any stand-up specials? If not, perhaps put it on Netflix?
I haven't done any specials. I've been part of specials, you know, I've been part of ensembles, and that's been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I do have two albums. My latest album was just released like 2 months ago, Debbie Live.
Oh, tell us about it. Plug it.
And it was so much fun, you guys. It was it was this night at the Ice House. It was with Mike Malone. We were just goofing around. We're having so much fun. And I just let loose. And I just had the time of my life with this group of people. The Ice House was packed. And when I got off stage, my husband goes, that was your next album. That's the album.
Oh, here you go.
He captured all of it, and I think he took out like 50 seconds. All he had to edit was about 50 seconds.
Wow.
And the album is hilarious, and it will be on sale when Keith and I do the Irvine Improv.
Yeah, I'm going to plug that away.
It's a Christmas deal, a Christmas gift thing. She could,
it is. It is certainly a Christmas gift for somebody naughty on your list. Not the nice, the naughty, because I love Jesus, but I cuss a lot.
Oh.
And it's funny, because, like, I always, you know, the three or four times I've seen you, you've been fairly clean, you know? So it surprises me that you say you curse a lot.
You know what the thing is? I think it's me, my face, my stature. I don't know what it is that people think I'm adorable, and they totally forget that I just did this big thing about, you know, blowjob Thursday, blow your husband every Thursday.
Well, that's funny. You know, that's a funny bit.
And I think they just kind of forget that I get naughty fast and fun, and, you know, I think it's the face that fools them.
But see, you get away with it because you could turn it around so fast, you know what I mean?
I think that naughty Thursday's
funny. Yeah, and again, it's talking about those things that really improve a marriage, you know?
Yeah.
And I stand by it.
That's great.
So wait, your husband recorded this CD?
We were at the Ice House, and they make recordings anyway. But he went ahead and he edited and produced an album, and it was fantastic.
Wow. I'm going to have to talk to your husband and see if he'll do that for me. Because
he's a good guy.
Yeah, I want to do it. I want to do a CD. I did a stand-up special, and I hated it. And I thought maybe I should. I can't watch myself on TV. You know, I'm very critical.
Like
yeah. And I thought maybe, you know, the jokes were good, but I thought maybe I should just done an album instead of a special, because no one watches TV unless it's on Netflix or something. You know, it's hard to sell DVDs. That's what I'm saying. But I think an album would be better because people still have CD players in their car. Yeah.
I think so too, and I think because stand-up is spoken word, and, you know, we forget how much fun spoken word can be, just listening and imagining what the audience looks like, and and you're a storyteller.
That's right.
You know, and that has to be audible.
Yeah. All right. I'm seeing if we have any more Twitter questions. The thing that I don't like about Twitter is, like, whenever you get a tweet, it resets my tweets.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, this is funny. Some guy just said, hey, ask Debbie if she's ever been to Jack in a Box.
I have been. Who hasn't? I love those two tacos for a buck.
We do. We all do.
I know. There's probably dog food in it, but I don't care. They are delicious.
Debbie, what's it like working with Brad Garrett?
I love him. I love him. He is so acidic on stage.
Yeah.
And I completely forget that, you know? And I go on stage, and the audience is still, you know, a little horrified. Like, we thought we were going to see Robbie. And it's so not Robbie. And he's just so much fun. I mean, if you like that, you know, in-your-face kind of Don Rickles, Lisa Lampanelli, you know, Fast and Furious, that's Brad. And he is hilarious. And such a delight off stage as well. And just as big as he is, that heart matches, just a generous heart.
Yeah.
Okay.
Last question, and then we gotta go.
Debbie,
what show, shows, make you LOL, What's LOL?
Oh my God, Fargo. Are you guys watching Fargo?
Yeah, yeah.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Okay, you recommend you.
Fargo makes me laugh out loud. Fargo makes me scream. Fargo makes me cover my eyes because I'm scared to see what's going to come next. And the reason I started watching it, of course, is because my friend Brad is in it, Brad Garrett. And, you know, he plays this great part. Oh, it's amazing. I don't want to give any spoilers for anybody.
Okay.
But,
I haven't seen it.
Shows that make me laugh out loud, oh my gosh, Fargo has got to be one of them.
All right.
Is appointment TV night, other than Walking Dead Sunday night. So. And I'm that mom that makes the theme food on Walking Dead night, and, you know, people wear zombie makeup, and the dog wears her Walking Dead collar, and we have Walking Dead blankets. And,
that's funny.
Yeah, but laugh out loud funny, if your listeners have not started watching Fargo, they need to get on board.
All
you
right.
can start second season, and it's a whole new story.
Let's
but
check that out.
It is the Coen brothers, and just...
Oh.
Dark comedy.
I love the Coen brothers, and that they made the movie, and so this is the series. I'm way behind the curve on this. Thank you.
It's interesting about dark comedy because, like, a lot of people get offended so easily about dark comedy.
You think?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It's like, you want to hear a dark comedy joke? I mean,
why not? Doesn't everybody love them?
Yeah, I love them. I mean, yeah. But this is actually, I don't do this anymore because, you know, it's too dark. But I was scanning this lady's groceries one time, and she bought cat food, like the whole store, you know? And she's like 80, you know, and she's like about to die, you know? And she has so much cat
food.
No, seriously. Like she has a lot of cats. It was weird, you know? And I was like, so I assume you have a cat, huh? She's like, yeah, I have 27. And first of all, if you have 27 cats, you're weird. You know, like
you like cats a lot.
Yeah, so especially if you're 100, it's kind of creepy. Anyway, so I was like, oh, and she's like, I don't know what I'm gonna do because I know my time's up, but I love my cats. And I was like, oh, she's like, yeah, I just want them to have good homes. And I was like, oh, how much longer do you have to live? She's like, probably a couple years. And I was like, oh, you know, you could sell the cats to the zoo, and they'll give you $100 per cat. So, you know, you could, you know, if you want to think about that. She's like, I will, thank you. What do they do with the cats at the zoo? And I was like, oh, they feed them to the alligators.
That's not nice.
I don't think they're funny.
See?
I'm looking at it from every angle here.
I knew that. I didn't know how that was going to go.
No.
You don't think?
Yeah.
No.
So he's cracking
see?
Up here. I don't know what to say.
Dark jokes aren't funny for everybody. That's
cats
what I'm saying.
To the alligators. Wow, what a visual.
Yeah, it just wasn't the punch. See, it's not funny. What?
We're laughing when you said that's not the punch. You finished it. That was funny. The punch. It was not quite the punch that you expected.
No. I just think it was funny because I've never seen an alligator at a zoo.
Oh, you haven't?
No.
Oh.
Well, they're there.
They're there.
They just don't move. That's why you don't see
they're very
them.
Still. They're very still.
Whatever. Yeah. It was a horrible story. I told you it wasn't that funny, but that's probably why I don't do it that much anymore.
That's right. Well.
But.
Yeah,
you'll
do that Thursday.
Oh, no.
Not even with a disclaimer.
I'm going to do the good stuff on Thursday because I want to impress you and I want to work with you again.
The tried and true stuff.
Yeah.
See,
you scared Debbie with that.
Wait, did I scare you?
No, nothing scares me.
No,
I'm married to a former Marine.
Oh,
there you go.
See? Well, we got to get going, Debbie, but thank you so much for the interview.
Thank you, Debbie.
Thank you so much.
I'll see you Thursday, and we're going to sell all your CDs, and we're going to go to a yard house.
Somebody naughty. Remember, buy a CD for the naughty person in your life.
All right. Well, I'll see you on Thursday, Debbie.
Thank you.
Thank you, Debbie.
Alrighty. Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
That was awesome. I think she now hates me.
Well, you're working with her, so she knows that joke now. She knows that.
I wasn't going to do the joke. You kind of bullied me into it.
I was nodding. I thought I was waiting for an amazing punch. I don't remember hearing that joke.
Because it's not funny.
No, I remember the old woman is about to die. That's when I got a little bit afraid of how you were going to handle that. When you said she was about to die and she had the 27 cats, I didn't know how that was going to end up.
No, seriously, it's a stupid story.
I like it. I kind of liked it.
You liked it. Debbie didn't.
Well,
I mean, I'm trying to work with Debbie here.
I understand.
Because here's the thing. I need to get in with as much headliners as I can so I could get work. Because right now, I mean, I've been doing stand-up.
I was just teasing you.
I've been doing stand-up for 12 years, you know? And
we know
I need to get out there, you know? And
I think you are getting out there. I don't know.
But I need to impress Debbie.
Well, you're going to be able to.
Because here's what I'm saying, folks. I'm the type of guy that makes dreams come true. I always have been. I've been wanting to work with Debbie for four or 5 years now, and now I'm about to.
Yeah, that's good.
You know what I mean?
You manifest.
Yeah. And then she, you know, I finally get the job to work with her, and then I tell this stupid cat joke because you conned me into it.
Always thought that was very cute.
And now she's like, well, maybe I shouldn't have hired him.
You know, I supported you in manifesting John Lovitz, but it didn't manifest.
Wait, what?
I said you wanted to manifest John Lovitz, and it didn't happen. I supported you that on that. I've always supported you.
Yeah, Alan Lee, you're a great guy. Well,
and we manifested this show, and Debbie
was awesome.
Awesome show.
Yeah, this is probably my favorite one.
Did you say that last week about the show?
Maybe,
Trevino was your favorite one.
This one is my favorite one.
And do you think about it? You think next week will be a favorite too, or just
next week's going to be good. We have Bobby Slayton next week.
Yeah, they're all good.
I'm not saying they're not, but what I'm saying is like each episode. They take away my favorite. And that's what I'm scared of.
Oh.
Because tonight, seriously, was one of my favorite ones. I had a blast.
Oh, we had a great time. She's a great guest.
And Debbie Gutierrez, right?
She said Gutierrez.
Yeah, so no, I was right.
You were correct. We didn't bet on that, so.
But I was right.
You were right. Okay.
Can you tell the world I was right?
Yes, Keith Reza pronounced Debbie Gutierrez. He pronounced it fabulously. In fact, I think you should get an award.
Yeah. And go see Debbie Gutierrez at the Irvine Improv on Thursday.
Thursday.
8 o'clock.
8 o'clock.
Tickets are $20, and it's going to be fun.
At the
Irvine Improv.
Irvine Improv.
And it's going to be awesome. I'm doing the show. I'd like to say Alan's doing the show. But
no, I am the unknown comic until I get my set together.
You know, we should get the unknown comic on the show.
Is that the one with the bag over his head?
Yeah.
Well, you know, give him a buzz.
Yeah, we'll give him a buzz. I don't know how to reach him because it's unknown.
That's a little problem with the unknown comic. How do you find him?
Whatever. Anyways, guys, Alan Lee, you want to plug anything before we get out?
Well, I'd just like to plug that I'm a happy guy, and we should all be happy. The holidays are coming up, and...
I think we should plug this. Next week will be the last show this year.
Yes, yes.
Because we're taking time off for
the holidays.
It does not mean we're canceled.
No, not yet.
We are coming back in January.
Tuesday
Razor Riff
evening.
Fans.
Tuesday.
Yeah. So we're coming back in January.
Yeah.
We're not canceled closing the season.
Oh,
next week, the last show, and then... we're taking time off to be with our families. So don't panic. More cat stories will come back in January.
With the crocodiles, too.
Yeah, I should have said alligators. Maybe it would have been funnier.
I like crocodiles. Is it crocodile cat? CC?
Yeah, whatever. All right, guys. tune in next week with Bobby Slayton. One more time. Follow Debbie Gutierrez on Facebook and Twitter. Very, very funny. One of my favorite stand-ups. And
call in your questions.
Call in your questions.
Tweet your questions. Bobby Slayton.
Yeah, we'll get that going as well. See you guys next week.
Yeah.
I'm Keith Reza. This is my trusty sidekick.
Yeah. Alan Lee.
All right. Have a good night, folks.
Yeah.
You're listening to Reza Riffs with Keith Reza and Alan Lee, right here on LA Talk Radio.